Well, the business Gary Hirschberg founded in co-founded in New Hampshire in 1983 started out with 7 cows in a field. It's now the world's largest organic dairy company, with more than $600 million in annual sales. It was bought by the French giant Danone in 2014, and sold again last year for $1.3 billion to the French multinational Lactalis. Last year, Gary Hirschberg and his wife Margaret bought 69 hectares near Motueka, where they've set up an organic training farm and where they spend part of each year. Gary Hirschberg's in Auckland to run a training and leadership program for organic and natural product producers and entrepreneurs. He says New Zealand has a unique opportunity to develop its organic and natural primary products to supply growing consumer demand around the world. Gary's in the Auckland studio. Good morning. Lovely to talk.
Good morning, Catherine. Nice to be with you.
There's a lot of reports coming out at the moment for warning of the biggest shake-up to agriculture and animal products, basically since we invented farming, for thousands of years, since we invented organised agriculture. Do you agree that a really big shift is upon us?
Yes, I do. In the US, conventional farming, dairy farming, is really struggling now as never before. We have many, many farm friends who are really in trouble. Debt is obviously a problem, but consumption in general is down. And of course, you've got the environmental consequences now that we understand, whether it's the methane production from cows or the runoff from conventional, particularly the confined animal feedlots that you find common there and a bit over here. So, you know, the good news is that there's also an emerging or reciprocal opportunity happening. While dairy consumption in the U.S. and globally is actually in decline, organic dairy consumption is on the rise. So I'm really here in New Zealand to talk about that opportunity and to encourage farmers and processors and retailers to get on board.
Change is coming in some form, and it's the speed, I guess, and as you say, whether demand increases for premium products or price increases for premium products, and it's the commodity end that gets affected by other things. But the big unknown, really, is the impact of these alternatives to animal protein. So I was just reading, with an element of scepticism, the Rethink X report out last week that was talking about how cheap protein technology products are going to be within 10 years compared to existing animal proteins. There's some fairly drastic figures it uses, but how do you see the market responding to the availability of these cheaper alternatives?
Well, in the U.S., just to give you a very current sense, we have watched a decline in yogurt consumption, which is my category, in dairy yogurt consumption, but a concurrent rise in these alternative plant-based dairy items. So you see oat and cashew and coconut and so forth coming up. But to be clear on scale, we're talking about a tiny little shift in net volume. So I still think there's great opportunity in dairy. But just to give you a little bit of sense of my story, Stonyfield, as you mentioned, we started with our one farm way back when, but today it's almost 2,000 family farmers. Average herd size there is 80 cows, and it's unheard of in America to think that you could make money with 80 cows, but all of our farms are profitable. And I say that because, of course, they get a better price. But also with 80 cows, of course, you've got time to be diversified, right? You're not entirely a slave to your 400-cow operation. Now, to be fair, this consumer, this millennial consumer who's driving all of this, the good news is this is a consumer who doesn't need to be lectured like my generation about climate change or pesticides or threats to people's health, environmental or human. So they're embracing these new ideas, and of course that's what's driving the plant-based. But they're also, as I say, embracing organic dairy. We're advocates for helping our farmers get on top of these trends. But again, there's a commitment needed on the farm side, and that's partly what we're hoping to teach over here is, again, it takes a few years. It takes 3 years to get certified. It takes a real different management style and system. But it works. And by the way, one of the benefits that I'm sure many of your listeners know is that organic cows actually live twice as long. So you've got, you know, that fundamental asset on the farm performing much better. So there's real economics as well as environmental benefits here. And, of course, the consumer's welcoming all of this.
I promise to spend plenty of time on the work that you do and on what's involved in organics, but I am, as a matter almost of establishing where this opportunity might sit volume-wise and export-wise, given how much we rely on dairy specifically and primary production generally, I'm interested now in what the breakdown is globally. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much is commodity milk product, milk powders, etc.? How much is organic now, and how much is already some of these alternative plant proteins? Ultimately, we might see the lab-based proteins coming in there now. But what does the overall market look like now?
Okay, so let's walk that through. So just overall organic, so that your listeners understand, is now about a $60 billion U.S. dollar business in the U.S. It's enjoyed a 14% compounded growth rate over the last 20 or so years. Dairy within that is again, organic, conventional dairy, and I mainly know the yogurt space. I need to be clear about this, but conventional dairy is in decline, down about 10%, and organic dairy is around 6.5 or 7% of total U.S. dairy, and of course, powder, dried milk powder is a big driver of that. I'm associated with a large buyer of New Zealand organic protein powder. And this is a company that's now crossing the $400 million, again, U.S. dollar mark, and is growing roughly 20% annually. So you're actually having a phase change here where the organic is on the rise. Now, plant-based, and again, I'm not really talking here about artificial or synthesized proteins. I'm talking about the plant-based alternatives. Again, I'm in the organic sector, and the synthetics are not even allowed. But plant-based makes up now about 10% of the overall organic dairy alternatives movement. But again, it's on the rise. It's growing 20, 25%.
See, the decisions that people are going to have to make is how much is going to change and how quickly. And is this going to be a niche part of our business? Is this going to be the premium part of our business? How do you talk to... who are you talking to? Like, are many of the organic farmers now smaller operations, niche operations? Are you getting interest from what we might call traditional or mainstream farmers?
Yeah, good question. So, again, just to remind you and your listeners what I've lived through in the last 20 years, we started, you know, I often joke organic, we had a wonderful company back in early 1980s, but there was no supply and no demand, right? I mean, there was no organic sector. It was less than probably $1 million in total U.S. sales. But now, again, it's up to 60 plus billion. And again, I remind you all, that's in U.S. dollars. So I have watched this phase change happen, and now it's accelerating. And so, yes, you know, when I first came over here to New Zealand, some 18 years or so ago, it was as a guest of Fonterra Organic, and many of those farmers are still producing. But as you know, Fonterra has had an on-again, off-again relationship to organic as the world markets have shifted. But it's on now, or I should say the market demand is on now. And that is not just limited to the U.S. China, I'm involved with a couple of organic, major organic, I'm talking about multi-hundred million dollar opportunities in China, all of which need organic protein powder. So we're seeing a phase change. And what I would say to the farmers and the processors in your audience is that exactly what happened in the U.S. has to happen here. New Zealand already benefits from a green reputation and a perception of green. And as you're perfectly well aware, it's not necessarily always earned. There are challenges here, just as there are with the U.S., but the reality is that this consumer, this new emerging consumer, most of whom, two-thirds of whom are having children, so that's the two major drivers of organic are having a health event, and about one in two Americans now are going to face cancer in their lifetimes, as an example, but also the other major driver is having children. And of course, in China, this is a major driver of this demand. So you know, who I'm speaking to is everybody from the early stage almost pre-revenue companies that will come to our institute here in Auckland, November 19th and 20th, and all the way up to multi-hundred million dollar companies here who, again, if they want to break into the U.S., the retailers, they don't need to hear from me, the retailers themselves, many of whom I have come to our institute, are saying, look, this is what my consumer wants, this is what I have to have. And literally, you know, when I started, no retailers were interested in organic. Now the largest of the large, Walmart, Costco, Target, all Kroger, all the majors must have an organic offering or they're going to lose to competitors who offer this consumer exactly what they want.
Why does New Zealand have a particular strategic advantage?
Well, again, you just have so many extraordinary assets here, not the least of which is you still have a vital farm economy. And I say that to remind people don't understand what's happened in the U.S. We have farm. When I was a child growing up, it was very much like my area just south of Motueka. Everybody was involved in agriculture one way or the other. We all knew where our Easter our foods came from at different holidays, and we knew the farmers. But that's no longer the case. We've urbanized and suburbanized, and now it's been relegated to a very small percentage and declining percentage of the population as farms have gotten much bigger and consumers have moved farther and farther away. Here, though, I spoke to an audience last night of 100, and I asked how many people here grew up on a farm, and every hand went up. You still have a vital farm infrastructure. You still have veterinarians and agricultural equipment suppliers, and you can't take that for granted. So right away, you've got an advantage. Number two, you've got these looming markets. As I mentioned, the growing millennial audience in the U.S., but also China and other parts of Asia who want and need clean food. Third, you've got just phenomenal agricultural ingenuity here. In my area, we're on our farm, we're now, and by the way, we're not yet organic. We're in the process of the BioGrowth certification, so we've got another year to go. But we're doing a diversified operation to make it, as you said, a teaching center for not just organic growing, but also organic business. So we've got our plans. We have now sheep, so we're going to be doing organic lamb. We're planting about 20,000 manuka trees for honey. We're doing market gardens, orchards, olives, grapes, you know, a variety of products. And I'll tell you, just within a few hundred meters of my farm, I've got people who just know this stuff cold, and you cannot take that for granted. So you've got the know-how, you've got the still clean environment, you've got the resources, you've got the ample sunlight, which, as we know, is a result of a problem with the ozone layer, but the net result is you get excess growth compared to other parts of the world, and you've got these looming markets. And the biggest thing I would say is that you're, again, you've got, you know, brand New Zealand, if you'll allow me to put it that way, already has an advantage over many other parts of the world. People expect green and clean here. And again, this consumer is going to settle for nothing less.
What's the economics of it, though, Gary? Do you expect some of these businesses attracted to this will be startups? What's the economics if you're an existing dairy farmer of converting part of your business compared to what you're getting now with Fonterra turning up and taking away your existing milk supply?
Well, again, I just have my examples probably the best. We, like I said, roughly 2,000 farmers, all of whom at one point or another were conventional, all of whom have converted and all of whom are making money. So for sure, there's no question that there's a transition period that is expensive. As you move over, you've got more labor. You have to, I spent the week grubbing out thistle on my farm, and I know when you no longer have the use of the herbicides and some of the other shortcuts, you've got other costs. On the other hand, what most of our farmers will tell you is that while there were a couple of years there of rocky travel, by year three, all are in the black and increasingly more so. And there's two reasons for that, Catherine. One, like I said before, is animal health. The animals are simply more productive and they live and last longer. But the other is your costs go down. As you're building soils as you're replacing synthesized soil amendments with actual carbon, and of course sequestering all the while, let's not forget organic sequesters 26 to 30% more carbon than does conventional agriculture. But you're actually building microorganisms. We have typical farms for us have over 300 species that have measurably returned to these, whether it's sugar or fruits or dairy operations. So again, there's a transition for sure, and you got to hang in there through there. And we actually fund farmers through that transition to provide part of that extra cost. But once you're through that, you know, it's pretty clear sailing. And again, you know, you can make money with less cows.
So anyone who wants to learn more, you've got a program this weekend in Auckland, I think.
No, it's not this weekend. November 19th and 20th is a institute that we run for entrepreneurs of all stripes. And I want to be clear, it's not just organic entrepreneurs or even natural, but this is our third year. It's a chance if you've got a business idea or a thriving, growing business. We have multi-hundred-million-dollar Kiwi companies who are there. It's a boot camp. I bring over retailers, bankers, financiers. Obviously, we use a lot of have a lot of local talent here. It's it's a chance to bring your business problem forward and get help with everything from managing your cash flow, not running out of money, most crucial, raising capital, marketing, selling. And it's a two-day intensive workshop. You can find out about it at hirschbergeninstitute.com. And, you know, we had 70 or so companies the first year. We had about 90 last year. I think we're going to be over 100 this year. But it's companies of all sorts. But of course, not, if there is a natural or organic leaning here, then I think we've got even a little bit more for you.
Thank you, Gary. Gary Hirschberg. You can see details of his operation, some of the things we've been discussing. There's links on our website to take you further.